Welcome to the Rocky Messages Podcast. Rocky is a gathering of people that want to know Jesus and love like him. If you hear something today that you'd like to know more about, you should check out our other podcast, Rocky Unscripted, where we take a topic and through conversation and study, we go a little bit deeper. And right now, let's join today's message.
Amen. Good morning, church. Good to see everybody here at the Niwot campus. Frederick campus, good to have you, and everybody who's hanging out with us online this morning. If you missed last week, it was a big week for our church. We officially entered into the middle age years. We turned 40 last week as a church, and unfortunately, we weren't able to meet at both campuses. Power was out here at Niwot, but Niwot, we paid the power bill, okay? We're back on, so we're one church in two locations again this week, so I know many of you were hanging out with us online last week, but if you missed the service last week, I'd encourage you, go to our YouTube page and check out the message. It was just a good celebration of remembering what God has done the last 40 years, but also an excitement of what is yet to be as we journey into the future. And today we're starting a series entitled, What Do I Do Now? And we're having a little fun with the title because our church, we've been in a season of change over the last couple of months. We've had a lead pastor transition. And so we went with this title. In fact, when Sean Moyers, our former lead pastor, when he asked me, hey, what message are you going to do? You know, one of your first series as a lead pastor, I said, I'm thinking about doing a series entitled, What Do I Do Now? And he laughed at me a little bit because he thought I was joking. And then I said, I'm serious, dude. I think this is where we're going. And it actually came to my mind a little bit because of something that he said in one of the weeks in the midst of the transition. He actually talked about this idea of trust. And he told a story about Mother Teresa and how there was this, you know, story of a guy who came to her one time. And she said, hey, what can I pray for you for? And he said, I really need clarity. If you could pray for clarity in my life. And she essentially said to him, I will not pray for clarity for you, but I will pray that you trust God. So we're gonna be having this conversation of trust. And here's what happens in a season of change is that usually uncertainty begins to kind of rise to the top. When change happens, all of a sudden we're a little bit less sure of what tomorrow or next week or next month kind of brings. And so it allows some other things to begin to creep in, like anxiety and fear and worry. And what's interesting, we talk about this kind of this challenge between trust and uncertainty, is that there's one thing you can be certain about is that oftentimes God will do some of his best work in your life in the midst of uncertainty. When you go and you read kind of, you know, the stories of the biblical characters in the New Testament and Old Testament, oftentimes it's in, you know, the midst of not knowing how it's going to turn out that God does some of his very best work, which is why those stories are written down. The groundswell of our faith, for those of us who are Christians this morning, I would remind you that, you know, the epicenter of our faith is filled with, it was filled originally with uncertainty because all the disciples who were hanging out that Saturday before Easter Sunday were probably the most unsure people in the history of the world. And again, if you're a Christian, you know this. If the moments of your life when your faith has grown or increased the most probably happened in a season of uncertainty, when you just weren't quite sure how it was going to turn out or how long that difficult season was going to last, you kind of kicked into your faith. You had to lean into your faith a little bit more. And so we're going to be having this discussion about trust and uncertainty over the next couple of weeks. And the question we're going to be asking is this. Here's the question. How do I choose trust in the midst of uncertainty? Because how you answer this question or how you're going to prepare yourself to answer this question, I really believe, especially if you're a Christian, really is a superpower of our faith. There is something to be reminded here. There's something to be learned here. How do we choose trust? How do we go with trust in the midst of the circumstances of life that we just don't quite know exactly how it's going to go? About 6 or 7 years ago, I got invited to a summer camp up in the mountains here. And I've talked about some of the stories from teaching up there at this camp, but I've been there every single year since, and I have a great time. It's all these high school students that come out from, you know, Kansas and Indiana, kind of out there in the Midwest. So they come out and And they kind of go and they do tent camping in the mountains. And I get to go up there and teach. And I have a blast with these high school students. And one of the things they do every year is one day they everybody goes whitewater rafting. It's about 120 so high school kids. We all go whitewater rafting. There's a company up in the mountains called Noah's Ark, which is convenient. And so we go there. It's a great company. And when you show up, you start getting all your gear on, you get your helmets and you get your paddle, you get your life vest, and then you start breaking up into boats. And because of the size of our group, we have quite a few boats, and in kind of our group, we had about 9 boats. And so 2 years ago, we start breaking up into boats. And at this point, I feel like I'm a pretty experienced rafter. You know, I've been doing it for 5-6 years. And so they asked me to get into a boat with some high school girls who this was their first time rafting. And so it was me and another adult leader. We get into this boat, and every boat has a guide, but then there's a head guide over all the boats, and they're in the very, very back of the group. And so the head guide comes up after you get all your gear on. They come up, and for those of you who are rafting, you know how this works. The head guide gets up there, and he starts telling you all the do's and don'ts, and this is how it works. And, you know, he's kind of balancing this, you know, this seesaw of, if you don't listen to what I do, you might die, but also you're going to have a lot of fun, okay? And so he's kind of going back and forth, and he's telling you all the things. And then eventually, he tells you the most important rule. He goes, you know, most important thing. If you don't hear anything else that I hear, this is the most important thing when it comes to rafting. And I've been rafting so much, and I've heard this, you know, talk so many times. It's, you know, I just remember. But he just says this: here's rule number one of rafting. Stay in the boat. It's the most important thing. And as the guy's giving the talk, you know, he's going through it. You know, he'd be like, you know, and when we get on the river today, the river's going so fast, and it's this amount of temperature. You know, the river's, you know, 52 degrees, but you won't have to worry about it because you remember rule number one, stay in the boat. And he just has you repeat it like 20 times. Stay in the boat. Don't forget the most important thing. You got to stay in the boat. So he gets done with this talk, and I get, you know, all the boat crews kind of get together with your boat, and you start telling boat stories from previous years, and I tell my boat, you are so fortunate to be in my boat because I have never broken rule number one. I've been rafting for years. I've never fallen out, and I'm committed that everyone in this boat is going to stay in this boat. We're going to get each other's back. You know, we're high-fiving it, and we're all excited. And we get down to the river, and we get our boat in, and I was quickly reminded this, that rule number one, stay in the boat, sometimes is easier said than done. We get the boat into the river, and we start practicing our drills. And one of the drills you practice is when your guide in your boat sees that we're potentially going to hit a rock, they will yell bump. And when your guide yells bump, everybody kind of goes to the center of the boat so that you don't break rule number one. So we start practicing our bump drills, and we're ready to go. We're so excited. And I kid you not, we're about 30 to 40 yards down this river. It is as calm as can be. It's barely moving. Our guide, we had a female guide in our boat. She has the boat kind of sideways, and we're just kind of drifting, and we're like number, you know, 6 or 7 in our boat line. So the guide is, you know, the guide of the whole trip is behind us in his boat, and we're just kind of going on. And I know you weren't there, but there's two sides to the story about what I'm about to tell you. There's my side, which is the truth, and the guide's story, which is not true. We're going down the river. The boat is sideways, and a good guide, again, is supposed to be looking out for the bumps and supposed to yell bump. I never heard anything out of her mouth, but we're just kind of going down so calm and collected, and it just so happens that there was this massive rock that you couldn't see, you know, too well, but I was in the middle of the boat, and so my back was coming to this bump, and I mean, we hit this bump so hard, and I just start going back very slow motion-like, and I remember thinking, you have got to be kidding me right now. And I'm just going back out of the boat. I go into the water. Whistles start blowing. I mean, we're not even in a class zero rapid. There's nothing happening. I'm out of the boat. All the boats go off to the side. I can't catch my boat. So then the head honcho guide is behind me. He yanks me out. You know, I get in his boat, and then I got to get back into my boat. I'll never forget my guide's face of complete disgust. And she goes, really? That's the fastest I've ever seen somebody fall out of a boat. She goes, that's gonna cost me about 45 minutes of paperwork. And I said, I'm so sorry for falling out of the boat. This is a little bit of a metaphor, I think, for life. These boat stories, we're gonna look at a boat story today, but life, a lot of times, it reminds me of a rafting trip. There's moments of life that is very calm, very peaceful. And then sometimes you end up in some very serious rapids, or potentially there are some unforeseen bumps. Bumps that have to do with relationships or finances or health. There's these unforeseen bumps of life, and all of us, we tend to struggle a little bit to, I think, spiritually speaking, stay in the boat. So I wanna have a conversation this morning about what does it look like for you and me to stay in the boat. Matthew chapter 8 is a boat story. Jesus is teaching to a crowd. Very, very common rhythm for him in the New Testament. Matthew was there. He tells us what happened. But essentially, Jesus was teaching. He gets incredibly tired. And then our boat story starts with the disciples getting on the boat. Here's what it says. Matthew chapter 8 in verse 23. Again, this is Matthew who's telling us a story. He says, then Jesus got into the boat and his disciples followed him, which is what good disciples do. But I think it's a good reminder. Jesus gets in first. The disciples go with him. And then look at this. It's unforeseen. Nobody saw this coming. But suddenly a furious storm came up on the lake, and so that the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. Very interesting. Jesus is taking a Sunday afternoon nap, but Jesus was sleeping. And here's why, Matthew tells us. Because he didn't care about the other people in the boat. Now, if you know this story, that's not true. That last part's not true, okay? I just added that in. But oftentimes, this is how we feel, isn't it? The unforeseen bumps or storms of life oftentimes leads us to start asking really big questions about God. And I see people all the time in the context of faith take an off ramp when suddenly a storm has approached. And I totally get it. I remember wrestling with this tension even as a middle schooler in the midst of experiencing some major changes in my life, watching, you know, my father pass away. And I remember thinking even to myself, if this is what it's like to follow God, then maybe I don't want anything to do with God. These disciples, they're following Jesus. He gets into the boat, and then they do as well. And then suddenly there's a storm that arises. And there is a trap here for you and me, especially people of faith, where we begin to think, whoa, 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 whoa. I thought following Jesus meant there wouldn't be any storms. Now, I can attest to the preaching of this church in the last 10 years that we have not, you know, preached a gospel that says if you follow Jesus, everything's gonna be perfect with your life and you're gonna have health and wealth. And we've not preached that, but I've seen some other people preach certain kind of things like that. And unfortunately, you know, what you kind of win people to, you have to keep them with. And there have been pastors or churches that have promised things to their congregations that are not in the scriptures. You can get into the New Testament and Jesus is not leaning in with his disciples and saying, if you follow me, you will be incredibly wealthy. He never says that. In fact, we have stories of Jesus that sat down with wealthy people and he encourages them to give away their wealth. Jesus never promises his disciples that in this life, on this planet, that they would live forever. In fact, all but just, you know, one of the disciples probably dies of old age. Everyone else will be martyrs for the faith, just like Jesus. In fact, Jesus told them that. When they kept coming to Jesus asking him, hey, who's gonna be greatest in your kingdom? Jesus said, you don't get it right now, but one day you're gonna drink from my cup, meaning one day you will die for your faith just like me. And they did. They did. Oftentimes we promise things in the context of our faith that just are not true. If anything, Jesus is very clear with his disciples where he says, in this world you will have trouble. It'll be difficult. I mean, he says things like, hey, the world hated me. You better get ready because they might hate you. He goes, there will be tension. And I think one of the reasons why Jesus is doing this little boat ride with his disciples, because he's teaching them a lesson that they're gonna have to come back to maybe hundreds of times for the rest of their life. And here's the lesson, that storms are inevitable. This morning, doesn't matter if you're a Christian or not, there will be storms in your life. Choosing to follow Jesus, which I think you should, does not remove the storms from your life. In fact, everybody in here who's a follower of Jesus has lived through storms. You might be living through one right now. And you could be in the room this morning and not be a Christian, and we have something in common, that you too have been through storms. So what's the difference for those of us who are people of faith? It's in how we interact with the storm, because Jesus is essentially telling his guys, you will not be able to prevent the storms, but you can prepare, and you should prepare, because it's not if, it's when. The storms, the bumps of life are inevitable. You could say like this, trusting God, it doesn't mean the storms will disappear. It means we face them with courage. We interact with our storms a little bit different than people without faith, because we know that he, talking about Jesus, is with us. We know that there is somebody else in the boat. And because of that truth, if we really believe it to be true, it allows us to interact with the bumps and the storms of life differently, or it at least should encourage us to interact with the storms of life differently. The disciples get in the boat because Jesus got in the boat. And suddenly a storm appears, and here's what happens, verse 25. And the disciples went, again, the storm's happening, waves are crashing. The disciples went and woke Jesus up, saying, Lord, save us, we're going to drown. All of a sudden, in the midst of the storm, the disciples are very uncertain about what's about to happen and how this boat story is about to conclude. And they respond the same way we respond. Matthew tells us the truth because he was there. In fact, I think he probably plays it a little bit light, because imagine if you're on the boat and water is coming on the boat and the boat begins to sink, you would be freaking out. I probably in this moment would have woke up Jesus in a very unchristian way. How about you? Jesus is sleeping. The boat is sinking. What was supposed to be just a normal boat ride across the lake now has turned into a life or death situation. And they respond the same way that you would respond. They are filled with worry and anxiety and fear. And in this moment, they have a decision to make. They could jump ship. They could get out of the boat, but they actually play, I think, wisely, because they know there's a guy in the boat who they have seen do some things. They've seen Jesus do Jesus things, and so this is kind of their, you know, we're gonna wake him up, this is our last resort kind of a deal. So they wake Jesus up, verse 26, it says this, and Jesus replied, very interesting. Now remember, this is in the midst of just a chaotic storm. He wakes up and he says to his disciples, you of little faith, why are you so afraid? To which, if you were there or if I was there, again, just imagine, it's just chaos, it's loud, you know, disciples are screaming, Jesus is screaming so everybody can hear each other, and he's saying to them in this very teachable moment, why are you so afraid? To which we would look at Jesus and go, look around. Look what's happening. We're in this massive storm, waves, water's coming into the boat, and Jesus' life vests haven't even been invented yet. There's no Coast Guard coming for us. We're out here on our own. We're afraid because we are uncertain. In fact, the only thing we're becoming a little bit more certain about is that this day might be our last day. To which Jesus didn't say this, but I wonder if there was just something in there. This is the point of the whole story, where Jesus, you know, in the midst of their fear, potentially would look at them and go, boys, you forgot rule number one. You forgot the most important thing. All you got to do right now is stay in the boat. Stay in the boat. You forgot that the most important thing will be to stay close to the one who has all authority and all power. You forgot. Story keeps going, verse 26, then Jesus does Jesus things, then he, Jesus, got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. Goes from chaos to calm in a second. And the men were amazed. They asked, look at this question, what kind of man is this? Who is this? We thought we knew who he was, but now we got this incredible boat story. Now we're wondering, who is this man? Because even the winds and the waves obey him. Who is this guy? We've seen some things, but now we're in the boat with him, and all of a sudden we're wondering, who is this man? To which I would answer that question by saying this: he's a man you can trust. He's a man you can trust. You can trust him in the midst of the metaphorical storms and bumps of life. So it goes back to the original question. In light of knowing a man who is worthy of our trust, we go back to this question. How do I choose trust in the midst of uncertainty? Well, for the disciples in the boat that day, it was going back to rule number one: stay in the boat. We choose trust with Jesus by staying where Jesus is and going, we know there's off ramps, we know we could jump ship because we weren't planning on a storm today, but we're just gonna stick with you. We're just gonna go with you. And after Jesus' demonstration on the boat that day, most of them would, except for one. But in the metaphorical kind of, you know, of your life and storms and boats, what do you do? What do you do if you break rule number one? What if you're only 30 yards into the river and you fall off? What if the storm was just a little too loud, a little too big, and it forced you to trust God a little bit less, and so you decided to veer off and you're gonna handle this on your own, or you're gonna try to solve this in a different way? Well, here's what I think Jesus would say. If you break rule number one, then rule number two is get back in the boat. You should get back in the boat. Being in the boat is a conversation about trust. And at the end of the day, do we really trust God? Not just with some, but with all the storms and bumps of life. Here's what I think, and this is why I think this is such a big conversation for us as a church right now, and even for you and for me in our context of faith, because I see us as a church. I'm talking Big C Church. I'm talking, you know, North America Church. I see us as a movement that was started 2,000 years ago that seems to be lacking in the trust department. Here's why I say that. One of our values around here as a church is first things first. It's the first value we talk about. If you ever go to our base camp class, we talk about this value all the time. It's probably one of the top values that we have. First things first, it says this, that we put Jesus above everything else, knowing that when we put first things first, everything else falls into place. And I would argue that that includes trust. First things first. And here's what I think, that sometimes we have some exercises that can help us develop trust in our life, but we refuse to kind of interact or trust Jesus with some of those things. For example, I would argue right now in North America, the church is telling a story that we do not trust God with our time. We do not trust him with our time. Our calendars are so full, they are so packed with all kinds of things, and I'm not even saying these things are bad things, but too much of a good thing can become a bad thing. And I think the church is showing signs that we do not trust God with how he has called us to live in the rhythm of a week. Attendance for the evangelical church, and I'm not here to shame anybody this morning, I'm just telling us this is the reality in which we live. But Christians, evangelicals in America are attending church less and less and less and less. It would seem we have less time for God. Meaning that I'm wondering if this is actually a conversation about trust. Do we trust him with the rhythms that he has called us to live? We're trusting him less and less and less with using the gifts and abilities that he has given to us. I mean, one of the biggest conversation right now in the evangelical world is the stat that is saying, you know, post-COVID, the church, Christians are serving less and less and less. Not only do we not trust God with our time, you know, for ourselves, we don't trust him giving him time for others. The numbers are going down. And one more thing, can you handle it this morning? This one gets a little close, and don't walk out of here and go, I knew he was going to say that, but can I just be honest? When it comes to the conversation of trusting God with our stuff, with our money, the numbers say that Christians are no more generous with what they have compared to those who do not believe in God. See, I wonder if there's all these kind of different areas of life where we trust him with some of it, but we don't trust him with all of it. These are opportunities to lean in and trust him, exercise of trust, and we don't take advantage of that. We don't engage with it. And then here we are on this kind of rafting trip of life, and our trust will be tested in the midst of storms and bumps. And instead of hanging on and trusting God with everything we have, I think too often we jump ship. Too often we get off of that boat. Because if we're really honest, what we're saying is, I don't trust Jesus with this storm. I don't trust Jesus with this topic. I don't trust him with my time or my money or my stuff. So here's a question I want you to think about this morning, especially if you're a Christian. And here it is. How do you react to life storms? Because again, it's not going to be if, it's when they come. And so how do we react with life storms? And I don't know if your story is like me, but one of the reasons I'm a Christian, and this, I'm totally serious here. I grew up in the church, and I heard the gospel presentation over and over and over again. I mean, I heard about, you know, Jesus on Sunday morning and Sunday nights and Monday night and Wednesday night. I mean, we were at church all the time. But one of the things that really stood out to me and was attractional in the context of faith was seeing somebody else's faith being tested. And when I was 12 years old, I had a first row seat watching my mom, who was widowed at the age of 35 and was left with three young kids. And I remember watching her story, and I remember even in my own faith journey thinking, if this is what it's like to be a follower of Jesus, then I don't want anything to do with Jesus. And for the next 5 years, I just watched her. And I'm telling you, she could have folded on her faith in any moment, and I would have looked at her and said, yeah, I totally get it. How in the world could you follow a God who supposedly is about, you know, all these great characteristics and he loves you, but look around, where is he? What is he doing? Why didn't he prevent, you know, my father from dying? Why would he allow this to happen? I mean, all these questions. And I watched my mom fill the gap to continue to follow and to trust God, not just with some, but with all. And I'm telling you, it's one of the biggest reasons why I leaned in as a middle school and then going into my high school years going, I don't exactly get it all, but I'm watching somebody's faith on display. I'm seeing a level of courage that doesn't even make sense to me. How could you even do that? And if my mom was here this morning, she might even be watching this service, she would say, I was able to do that because I was very aware that there was somebody else in the boat with me. And when I leaned in, when I got past the woe is me and life isn't fair, which I'm just telling you, friends, it's not fair. You know that. Life is not fair. Jesus never promised it to be fair. We live in a world that is under the bondage of sin, meaning that there are things that are decaying, and that includes your body and mine. That is a reality of truth. And for followers of Jesus, we give credit to the gospel going, this is why Jesus went to the cross. That ultimately we have the greatest hope in this life, which potentially the greatest fear for you and me is probably death. And Jesus said on the cross, I will take care of that for you. The superpower of Christianity is remembering who is in the boat. Oh yeah, that's right. We don't have to be afraid. Why? Because Jesus is here. He's taking care of that. Oh, I don't have to freak out about this unforeseen bill or unforeseen phone call because Jesus is here. My oldest daughter, Raya, she turned 18 this year, and a couple of weeks ago, she taught at the the high school, middle school ministry over at our Frederick campus. She did such a great job. She's probably watching in this service. Girl, I love you. And she talked about this idea. So I totally ripped this whole sermon from her. Okay, I just stole it. And she was really challenging these middle schoolers and high schoolers of what it looks like or how you respond in the midst of difficulty in your life. And so she used an example. I chuckled at it and I've remembered it. So it was good teaching on her part, but she was kind of getting into their world. And so instead of using a boat metaphor and bumps and storms, this is what she said to middle schoolers and high schoolers. She said, guys, I want you to think about something. When you get up in the morning and you start getting ready for the day and then you leave the house and then you get to school or work or whatever you're doing, and what if you realize that you left your cell phone at home? And I started thinking, I wish I would leave my cell phone at home more, okay? But again, these are middle schoolers and high schoolers, and you know, their phone is really tied to so many things in their life. And so she said, you know, let's suppose that you left it, you lost it, you didn't know where it was. She goes, don't we all have a choice to make in these moments where we're really unsure? And she said this, and she posed a question. She said, in the moments when you're unsure about where something is, maybe you lost something or what's about to happen, are you going to choose peace or panic? And I thought that was very profound for an 18-year-old to go, I'm realizing at 18, I have decisions every single day about how I respond to life. And Jesus is offering me an opportunity to respond with peace. Do you know what following Jesus looks like and sounds like? It looks like and it sounds like Jesus. And that day in the boat with his disciples, he was not the one losing his mind, was he? He was the one ironically taking a nap. He was sleeping. He was not worried at all. And we don't really know if he was like really sleeping or if he was doing that parent sleeping that some of you do when your kids are like, we need help. And you're like, I'm sleeping. You know, I don't know what he was doing. He seemed very calm. He seemed very collected in the midst of total uncertainty. And I wonder, listen, I'm not saying that we can't be human and respond to the bumps and storms of life, but shouldn't we bring these to Jesus in the midst of our freak out and in the midst of his calmness, we go, oh yeah, that's right. Peace or panic, Matt? Which one are you going with? Storms are inevitable. Do you trust them? I'm telling you, this is the superpower of our faith. You could say it like this, the difference with faith is that we know we aren't weathering the storms alone. Now, this is what separates for those of us who are Christians or unchristians, because there is a guy. There's a guy who is in the boat who is more powerful than any earthly storm. And if you're not a Christian, you go, whoa, Matt, how could you say that? Because we've got the story of Easter. If Jesus can defeat death, then he can do whatever he wants with whatever he wants. And here's the tension of faith, okay? And I totally get it. And we all have this in common. Nobody in here is going, no, I trust God with everything. We say that and we sing that and we should. And the reality is that's a lot easier said than done. Trusting God, responding to the difficulties of life, knowing that he's in the boat. Why in the world would we trust that guy? Why in the world would those disciples trust that guy who was in the boat that day with him? Because they eventually would seem to be the most trustworthy man they've ever followed. Because when you die and come back from the dead, you'll begin to trust him and go with everything else he says. I think the church, not just our church, but all churches, we're living in a season of the world, of history, where the world is panicking. And I would encourage you and me to not follow suit. I would encourage you in the midst of uncertainty to stay in the boat, to lean in and to trust God, not just with some, but with all. And here's what we know. There's a verses after this story where it just says, when the disciples got to the other side, and I'm sure all those brothers were ready to get out of that boat. I don't know how long storms last. We don't always know when we're about to enter one or to exit one, but we do know they will show up. And what an opportunity for those of us of faith in the midst of hardships to trust God, not less, but more. And I'm wondering if that just might be one of the greatest evangelical tools that our church could provide to the communities that we live in. People filled with anxiety and fears and worries who live around a church that is confident because they are aware that the man who they chose to follow and do life with is trustworthy. Let me pray for us. Father, this morning we thank you for the reminder we can trust you. And I am guilty, as anybody else who's listening this morning. There are moments in life where the unforeseen shows up through a phone call and an email or just the reality of life. We don't know what the rest of this day holds. We don't know what this week holds or this month or the rest of this year, but we do know one thing, that you have not left us, and that you have demonstrated your power and authority on a cross 2,000 years ago. So I pray that in the midst of uncertainty, we would be a church that would choose peace over panic. As we gather together every Sunday, that we would remind ourselves in the storms of life, you are in the boat with us. And we don't know how long the storm will last, and we don't know what the results of the storm will be. But I pray that we would be a church that would trust you with not just some of our life, but all of it. And that very well may be a reason why somebody who has yet to come to a conclusion of who you are maybe see our faith of trust in you on display. And one more person just may make a decision to follow you. We love you. We thank you. We thank you for loving us way before we loved you. And we pray all this in the name of your son, Jesus. And the church said,